swing and a high fly ball well struck out towards left center. Gardner back at the track, at the wall, and it's gone. Ryan Dozier has given the Twins a 1-0 lead. Swing and a ball ripped right field. That one back there, and that one is gone. Just over the right field wall with a low line drive homer. Eddie Rosario, two homers in the first inning, and the Twins have jumped out. It is 3-0 Minnesota. Swing and a ball ripped right field. That one on its way. Gone. Didi Gregorius with one swing has tied this thing up. Wind to kick the payoff pitch. Swing and a drive, right field, and that one is gone. Gardner into the second deck, and the Yankees have taken a 4-3 lead. Swing and a ball ripped, left field. Rosario back at the track, and it's gone. A line drive homer over the auxiliary scoreboard out there in left. Aaron Judge with his first postseason homer, and the Yankees have opened up a 7-4 lead. And the 0-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. Ball game. And the Yankees win the wild card. They're moving on, and they'll take on the Indians.
It's not how you draw it up, I can tell you that. Some of the moves that we've made and some of the players that we've signed, we know that our bullpen gets shut down. You can't do that every game. I mean, you just can't, because physically they can't bounce back. I gave them all Sunday and Monday off for a reason, you know, because of the way it is. The character was shown in the way we fought back and answered in the first inning. That was huge. Scoring those three runs right in the first inning just showed that there was what I've seen all year is the fight in this club.
We're going to start out with Trevor game one, Kluber game two, Carrasco game three, and Tomlin game four. And now saying that, we're a little creative with our roster. Tomlin will be available in the bullpen first couple games, so game four could change. Trevor will be available later in the series, whether it be a start or bullpen. We're trying to get as much flexibility as we can. We wanted to keep Kluber on his day, so that was the reason the 2-5. We didn't try to overcomplicate.
Well, they can compete with anyone with that bullpen,
right,
and with the power they showed, three more home runs tonight. The difference is Cleveland's bullpen is as good as the Yankees' bullpen, which is ridiculous. We have two bullpens this good, and now they'll be going head-to-head. The difference is Cleveland has Corey Kluber. And even though he's going to start game two, they still have three very, very good starting pitchers in this series. And when you could throw Kluber in game two, and he's been the best pitcher in baseball since June the 1st, that's a slight edge that the Indians have over the Yankees.
Y'all show no effort. None whatsoever. You actually don't defend. You just throw lobs and alley-oops thinking that that's what people paid to come see. Ooh, ah, whatever the case may be. Listen, it's a joke. The fact of the matter is when you go on, it's basketball. Football would be different because it's violent. And I'm not trying to say that you go all out the way that you do during a game. But when you play harder in the summertime, competing in a summer league game, than you do for NBA All-Star Weekend, when all it's about is your talent against my talent and we going up against one another. That's where you're robbing folks. That's what this is about. This ain't about who's on the squad. The point is, whatever your team is, whatever you accumulate, are y'all going to compete against one another Sunday afternoon?
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
My, oh my, it is indeed the extravaganza. You are indeed listening to ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Toledo Sports Leader, hope you're having an outstanding Wednesday afternoon. My, oh my, another action-packed montage thrown together at the top of the show by Mr. Jim Cushland. Hopefully that will be an indicator of things to come. It's a lot to live up to when you have a montage that outstanding. We got a lot of things we're going to have to do to make that work. How about your boy Luis Severino last night? How about one third of an inning in a play-in game to get to the real baseball playoffs in the ALDS? One third of an inning and gets picked up and carried to victory. Not that he got the victory, of course, but he was rescued by one of the top two bullpens in baseball. You just heard the likes of Tim Kirchen talking about that amazing bullpen that New York Yankees have as they took down the Minnesota Twins in the play-in game for the American League last night. 8-4. Severino got rocked in the first inning. Did not make a twin swing and miss. Not one time in the very few pitches that he threw did he get a twin to swing and miss, despite firing at 100 right out of the gate. What an unbelievable performance. 8 2/3 innings of tremendous relief by the New York Yankees bullpen, matched probably, as you heard Kirk, Jen, only by the bullpen full of relievers of the Cleveland Indians. Well, except for the fact that the Cleveland Indians bullpen, which has been the best in baseball all season long, isn't the same Cleveland Indians bullpen. Yeah, you know where I'm going with that. That sets up the discussion about whether or not Terry Francona is right to mess with the best bullpen in baseball, because it really was. Long relief, short relief, losing relief, holding leads relief, short relief, closing, setup, you name it, they did it better than anybody in baseball. And now that seven-man bullpen, or eight-man bullpen at some points, in some points during the regular season, has just five members left, and two converted starters will be sitting in that bullpen and joining them, talking, of course, about Salazar and Clevinger. Is that the right move when you have bullpen against bullpen, the likes of which these two teams have, going against one another in this best-of-five series? Really, really going to be something to see. What a great game last night. What an amazing game last night. You know, at the end of the day, it was 8-4, and there was a lot less action, a lot less fireworks after that first inning than there was in that first inning. So maybe I shouldn't call it a great game, as if it was some sort of a, you know, a pitching duel or a full-on slugger, you know, a shootout or a slugfest, you know, in which it was 9-8 or 11-10 or anything like that. It was 8-4, relatively comfortable, and the Twins were shut down by that Yankee bullpen. But it was a unique way to start the postseason, if you wish to call it that, the play-in game for the right to get to the playoffs. There is still a long way to go in trying to settle whether or not this is the right way for baseball to do this. After 162 games, to send somebody on to the real playoffs after just one 9-inning tilt, and to send somebody home after just one 9-inning exhibition, if you will, the idea that they play series at every single level of baseball, from day one, week one, series one, all the way through the rest of the regular season, and all in the postseason, you play series. Who's the better team? Best 2 out of 3. Who's the better team? Best 3 out of 5. Who's the better team? Best 4 out of 7. It's a series. Every step, unless, of course, it's a best of 4-game series, and then it might be just 2-2. Nobody was the better team. But it's a series to see who is the better team each and every step of the way through the Major League Baseball calendar. And yet, in the wild card game, it is just that. It is a game. It is not a wild card series. And to me, that is an atrocity. I'm not feeling bad for the Minnesota Twins. I have no reason to. I have no liking for the Minnesota. I have no dislike for them. They're just irrelevant to me. They would have been the next opponent for my team. That's all I can say about them. I have no strong feelings about the Twins one way or the other. But it doesn't seem right that they or any team tonight, it's going to be one or the other, the Rocks or the D-backs, that's going to go home after 162 games, and you get 9 innings to decide whether you move on, instead of a series like you've played all the way through. So I'm still going to continue to gripe. There are a lot of other people griping about the same thing. I was happy to hear Mike and Mike kicking this around a little bit this morning, so I'm not the only curmudgeon who's really tweaked about this. I'm glad to hear that there are a lot of other people in a lot of other arenas, if you will, discussing this, and that baseball is kind of hearing it a little bit from those who think this should be a best of three playoff series to start the postseason for those wild card teams. So that is what it is. And now we have the matchup of the Cleveland Indians and the New York Yankees, and the question of how Terry Francona is going to attack the Yankees has been answered. You heard some of it in the montage. He gave you the rotation, and he told you what his bullpen plans are as well. Is it the recipe for victory against the Bronx Bombers.
We're going to start out with Trevor game one, Kluber game two, Carrasco game three, and Tomlin game four. And now saying that, we're a little creative with our roster. Tomlin will be available in the bullpen first couple games, so game four could change. Trevor will be available later in the series, whether it be a start or bullpen. We're trying to get as much flexibility as we can. We wanted to keep Kluber on his day, so that was the reason the 2-5. We didn't try to overcomplicate it.
Yeah, and yesterday we had some very interesting discussions about that, by the way, because Terry Francona said something to the effect of, well, here's why we're starting Bauer first and Kluber in game two. It's to keep him on his regular rest. And that's not true for the first start. It does make sense when you consider the fact that if there is a game five, Kluber would be on his regular rest going from game two to game five. He would not be if he started game one. He'd be on an extra day's rest, or he'd be going in game four on short rest. So to ensure that Kluber goes on his regular rest for two starts, it would be games two and five. And also, and I heard this explained pretty clearly this morning as too, what makes a lot of sense if you're trying to understand the logic and the rationale, and we are, about why he is not starting his ace in the first game, which is kind of traditional and standard operating procedure in game one, is because if this series goes in four or less, Corey Kluber would still be then set up to start game one of the ALDS also on regular rest. So it makes a little bit of sense from that standpoint. The only thing that may not make sense is the part about Tomlin being available in the pen, and thus we may have a change in starters in game four, if there is a game four. I don't like the idea, quite frankly, of Josh Tomlin in the pen. I don't like the idea of Danny Salazar getting a start in game four, if that is indeed what Terry Francona is thinking about. There are some guys that I think are probably best used in certain ways, and he's taking them out of those ways, in my opinion, based on this year alone. Salazar has been a starter, and last year he was on the All-Star team. This year he was inconsistent and injured. And to bring him onto this roster at all, in my opinion, is questionable. To think that he might start game four instead of a dominant Mike Clevinger, who has been just that this season, would be something that I would have a bit of a problem with. Now, having said all of that, as I did yesterday, I will give the obligatory. Yes, Terry Francona knows more baseball than I ever could hope to. Yes, I'm wrong, and he's right. I know that. Eventually it will be proven, but until it is, I'm going to continue to say, I'm a little confused by some of the decisions made on the postseason roster and also by the starting rotation / bullpen plans that Terry Francona has kind of laid out. So that's where I sit on this, and we're going to dig into it a little bit more with Dennis Manilov, who covers the Tribe and more, out of Cleveland. He'll join us at about 3:35. Then coming up in the second hour of the show, just to kind of run it down for you, Jason Candle, head coach of your Toledo Rockets, off to a 3-1 start, coming off of a tough loss, obviously, 2 weeks ago now, it would be, by the time they play Saturday at the U in Coral Gables. But we're going to talk to him about their MAC matchup against Eastern Michigan to start the MAC schedule coming up. That'll be at about 4:40. So before Manilov and after Manilov, a lot of time for you to talk. 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Kush, are you satisfied with the matchup? Do you like Indians-Yanks, or would you have preferred Indians-Twins?
Well, technically speaking, I would have preferred Indians-Twins. I mean, you know, okay, well, they beat them in Cleveland a lot this year. Yeah, but they're familiar with each other, and the Twins, a decent team, nice little story. But I think at the end of the day, the Indians matched up a little bit better with them. You know, that all being said, I'm fine with the matchup. It'll be fun, even if it goes the five full games, Bob. Game five would be a week from today. It doesn't matter when it ends. I'd be more than happy to do the nation a favor by getting rid of the Yankees and out of the playoffs. So you don't have to hear about them anymore. But I've been thinking more in the last day, and I definitely want to bring this up with Dennis next segment. The whole thing about the rotation and the Kluber start, I get all of it, but there's one big problem on the horizon that if it goes this way, means you will not have Corey Kluber for Game 5, and it's starting to scare me a little if it gets that point.
What's that?
Have you seen the forecast that they're calling for
Friday? Oh, you're going to play weather now.
Yes. Well, because if they bump it, and it would not be unprecedented to the travel day Saturday, that would put Kluber on short rest if it goes 5. I'm just saying, for anybody who's seen the weather report, and Toledo's weather report, by the way, for Friday, basically identical. They're calling for rain more or less all day, so it is possible.
Does it say, Jim, because I'm not playing meteorologist today, you can help me out here. Does it say like storms or just like, you know,
nice
some rain?
Autumn rain.
Nice autumn rain.
And one of those
so
autumn rain days.
The kind that you
days.
Think you can play through or the kind that would stop play?
I think if this would be the way they're forecasting it, this would be the kind that would stop play.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, that is something to consider.
That might be the only really big issue, because think about it. If it's based on Corey Kluber, I mean, word is that Kluber and Francona talked about this almost 2 weeks ago. How, and Francona, more or less, is my understanding, he asked Kluber, how would you prefer we handle this? And Kluber's answer apparently was, be on my normal rest. No extra days, and if possible, no short rest either.
Even though in game two, if weather notwithstanding, it would be on an extra day's rest.
Yes.
But
yes,
on game five, it would be on regular rest, which would certainly be preferable.
But that gets thrown out the door if the rain decides to persist.
I said weather notwithstanding.
Right, right.
But you're right. Weather could jack all
of
that up.
So I'm just saying, I've been seeing the forecast and noticing it since yesterday and thinking, so it's going to be Mother Nature that possibly screws up Francona's idea here.
Yeah, it very well could. It very well could. That is a really, really interesting thing to look at. All right, hey, before we talk about Buffalo Wild Wings, we got a wild stat for you. Let me tell you about the best place to watch college and professional football. And, yeah, it's the same place. It's Buffalo Wild Wings. Because you know what? This season they have tricked the place out at all of the Buffalo Wild Wings locations, going above and beyond to make this the perfect football atmosphere, your man cave for all of the games. Countless taps and HD screens. And, yeah, they have even now included the food and drink specials to reflect football. Right now the classic menu item they brought up is the 35th Wex sandwich, perfect for your football nutrition. And also, for a limited time only, partake of the Blue Moon barbecue sauce. It is simply amazing. Whether you use it on wings or you use it on tenders or whatever the case might be, there's a lot more, but you got to go in to find out. To the place with the best football experience, it's Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. We're going to talk more baseball with Maniloff coming up at about 3:35. As I said, get his thoughts on the rotation, get his thoughts on the roster, get his thoughts on the bullpen decisions made by Francona, and what he thinks of the Yankees as the matchup for the Indians in the ALDS. That'll be coming up at about 3:35 after your local sports center. Kush, let's get us a wild stat.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the wild stat of the day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Yeah, with that wild card loss yesterday, the Minnesota Twins have now tied a major league record by losing their 13th straight playoff game, if you call yesterday's a playoff game. Streak goes back to game two of the 0-4 division series. The team the Twins are tied with are the Red Sox, who lost 13 straight playoff games, starting with the infamous Game 6 of the 1986 World Series, that would be the Buckner game, and ending with a Game 1 ALDS win in 1998. So there you go. The Twins set two records this quote-unquote postseason, going from the first team to lose 100 games to the postseason the next season, and now their 13th straight playoff loss. So that is your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. All right, coming up, like I said, we got ourselves a local sports center, but not until I tell you about the 4K a day. I got a chance for you to win $1,000 four times a day. Put it in your back pocket by listening weekdays at 9 a.m., noon, 3 p.m., and 6 p.m. for the keyword. Text that keyword when you hear it to 62582. You probably should have that saved by now on your phone, right? 62582 for a chance at $1,000 four times a day. It's the 4K a day only from Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, Local Sports Center next, Maniloff after, right here on the...
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We're going to start out with Trevor Game 1, Kluber Game 2, Carrasco Game 3, and Tomlin Game 4. And now saying that, we're a little creative with our roster. Tomlin will be available in the bullpen first couple games, so Game 4 could change. Trevor will be available later in the series, whether it be a start or bullpen. We're trying to get as much flexibility as we can. We want to keep Kluber on his day, so that was the reason the 2-5. We didn't try to overcomplicate it.
How about Terry Francona strategizing then? Instead of going with the traditional, the ace starts game one, he's got some plans. The question is, are they the right plans for the Indians as they get ready for game one of the ALDS starting tomorrow against the Yankees at Progressive Field after the Yankees took care of the Twins in the play-in game last night? Joining us now to break it down roster for roster and rotation and bullpens as well is our good friend Dennis Maniloff covering those Indians out of Cleveland for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and for Northeast Ohio Media Group. D-Man, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Thanks for having me on, Bob.
You know, I start this as I have each time I have talked about this. Yes, Tito Francona is right, and I'm wrong. He knows more baseball than I could ever in 100 lifetimes. I get that. I know that. So I have no reason to question his plans here. However, I want to question his plans here a little bit. I want to talk to you, D-Man, about the decision to start Corey Kluber in Game 2 on 6 days' rest, so he is a little bit off his rest, in the interest of keeping him on his regular 5 days if he has to start a Game 5. And how do you feel about starting Trevor Bauer, whose last playoff experience involved blood dripping down his hands, and obviously a very difficult circumstance for him? How do you feel about getting the postseason started off with Bauer on the mound, Dennis Maniloff?
Initially, I was surprised, like I think most people. But then the more I thought about it, the more I listened to what Francona said, the more it made sense for his personnel. I mean, first of all, I think Terry Francona has earned the trust of those around him. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame as a manager someday. He reinvented the wheel when it came to relievers last year in the postseason. Why can't he do it when it comes to starters this postseason? But it does come down, though, to Francona's knowledge of his personnel and also input from his guys. I mean, Corey Kluber, you know, here's the thing. It's easy to pitch on short days rest when you're not the one pitching on short days rest. It's easy to do it for somebody.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, and Corey Kluber never complained about it, but I get the sense that, you know, that World Series wore him down a great deal, and, you know, it probably carried over the extra workload, maybe the shortness of some of the starts carried over into the following season. The point being that Kluber said to Francona, hey, I prefer to stay on regular rest, if at all possible. And when they looked at the map of how the games would unfold, you know, there's two possibilities for regular rest. There's 1-5 or there's 2-5. And, you know, I think that in Kluber's case, because 1-4 is not going to give him the full rest. So that obviously factors into it. And then when you kick it back to Bauer, I think you got a different Bauer this year than you did last year. A much more mature Bauer, a guy who's pitching better, and a guy who I believe has graduated from sort of the hijink stage of his career to a legitimate starting pitcher. If they were opening on the road, having said what I just said, I'm not sure that Bauer would be the choice. In fact, I know he wouldn't because Carrasco's the guy that was picked to start Game 3 in the Yankee Stadium. But because they're at home and because Bauer has been on a roll, I think Francona feels comfortable enough with him.
Makes sense. Dennis, before we talk more about the bullpen and how that affects the rotation, as you heard Tito say in the clip that we played, you know, there is some fluidity there. Tomlin could potentially be used in the pen early in the series and thus not start Game 4. And Bauer could be used out of the pen later in the series. But I want to talk about that in a minute. But let's go to the opponent now, and let's talk about what happened last night. First of all, are you glad that the Indians are facing the Yankees, or would you have preferred them to face the Twins? Did you have a dog in that fight last night from a competitive standpoint for the Indians?
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who's grown up in Northeast Ohio and I write about the Indians, I had a rooting interest, if you will, in seeing the Twins. And plus I like some of the guys on the Twins too, professionally, but, it didn't happen that way. I think once Santana, let that 3-0 lead go in the first inning, that was the end of the Twins. I don't care how competitive they were the rest of the way. They were competitive for a few more innings, but once that lead vanished in the first inning, the Twins were cooked. You know, even though the Twins had played very well at Progressive Field in this regular season, if you got the Indians players and personnel on Truth Serum, of course they would have wanted the Twins because, you know, primarily because of the pitching. I mean, I think the Indians feel like they can solve the Twins pitching no matter where they play. And oh, by the way, the Indians were very good at Target Field this year. So, the Twins were probably almost certainly the preferred choice of the Indians, but they would never say that.
Okay, fair enough. Now let's talk about how the Yankees got this done. I mean, after that that unbelievable first inning, Severino just absolutely wets the bed. I mean, deer in headlights, comes out firing triple digits on the gun, but can't make a single Twin swing and miss. Not one of his pitches was swung on and missed by the Twins in that first inning. Of course, getting just the one-third of an inning before he is lifted, and then the remarkable performance by the Yankees bullpen. What does that say about their ability to come back from that, and how do you rank that bullpen or rate it, Dennis, after they went 8 2/3 to hold off the Twins, to the Indians bullpen? How do you compare the two?
They're very comparable, in my mind, the way that certain guys have been pitching. You think about Green, and then, of course, you've got Betances and Chapman and a bunch of those other guys. I mean, they're nasty. There's no question about it. And, you know, I've liked the Yankees from the beginning of the season as a team that's viable. I get that they're ahead of schedule probably by a year. So they'll, believe it or not, a Yankees team is going to be, playing the nobody gives us a chance card. You never thought you'd hear that, especially against the Cleveland team, but that's what'll happen. Probably already has started happening today. Nobody gives us a chance against the mighty Indians. You know, they're supposed to sweep us and, you know, da, 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 da. They'll play that till the hilt. But the reality is the Yankees are a good team. They're young and they're good and they're sprinkled with veterans. And their relief core, their bullpen, gives them a lot of confidence going into a game. That, you know, if the starter can just, especially in a postseason, I mean, you'll see Girardi manage it, I think, the way Francona does. And he did it in the wild card game, the play-in game, as you call it. He'll go to his bullpen early and often and, you know, empty the bullpen if necessary. It's the starter's hooks, in general, in the postseason, are quick, but they're even quicker now that Francona has sort of provided that template where if you have to, go get your starter in the third inning and worry about tomorrow. So I'm sure Girardi's going to adopt that same kind of deal. As you said, he already has. So, but I'll tell you this, when I look at their offense, you know, a lot of talk about Judge and a lot of talk about Sanchez because they're power guys. To me, Gregorius is the guy who makes them go. And, you know, he's so dangerous and such a good player to me. And he showed it last night with that three-run homer in the first inning.
Dennis Manilov is our guest. Dennis, by the way, I love the narrative, if they're using it. Boy, the mighty, mighty Indians. Nobody gives us a chance against the mighty, mighty Indians and their $139 million payroll compared to the Yankees' $223 million payroll. Mighty, mighty, my A. You know, don't give me worthy underdogs. You're New York. You spend more money in a single year than many franchises spend in five combined years. Don't give me this, boy, worthy underdogs here. If they want to play that to motivate themselves, that's fine. But you know what? Don't play that card in front of me because that's, not, I don't mean you. I'm talking about them, if that's what they're doing, because that's garbage. You spent $223 million, second only to the Dodgers, $265. You damn well better be expected to go to the World Series. Don't give me this underdog garbage. Dennis Manilov, say hello.
I hear you. Personally.
Coach. Hey, Dennis. You know, I want to go back to something, and I kind of threw this out to Bob before at the end of our last segment, before we came to you. And it's on the whole starting rotation thing and how Tito's going to handle it. And the more I'm thinking about it, I kind of understand it. My understanding is he went to Kluber a couple weeks ago and said, what would you prefer? And he said, normal rest. However, there is one thing outside of Tito's control that may screw up that whole thing. They are calling for a whole bunch of rain Friday. What happens if they can't play Friday and it gets bumped to Saturday, which is indeed possible?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll believe rain when I see it because we've gone about 9 years without it. So, but you know what, Kush? I'm sure they've run that through their computers, their minds, the Indians and their personnel and their staff, what they're going to do. I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm sure it's come up in discussions and contingencies, and, you know, how they're going to sort it out. The whole thing comes down to this, though, for me. All right. If anybody has the right to create with their pitching staff or their lineup or whatever, it's Terry Francona. So, and you know what else is true, Kush and Bob? If Bauer gets lit up in game one, I mean, and then the Indians lose, which is a possibility because the Yankees can hit, and the Yankees win the game. All of a sudden, Terry Francona has put himself right in the target line for, oh my gosh, Terry Francona blew this series by outthinking it. So I like the fact that Terry Francona has stuck his neck out to this extent and basically said, you know what, I'm putting myself on the line here. If it blows up, people are going to blame me, and I'm ready to accept that.
I think that's fair. A fair way to look at that. I hadn't considered the weather aspect to this at all, obviously, and that can certainly change everything. But you know, when you break down, what's the word I'm looking for? Not position by position, start by start rotation. It makes sense, especially if you consider the fact that perhaps this doesn't even go five games, Dennis. And that was the other part of this. Weather notwithstanding, if they get this thing done in four or fewer, they do line up with Kluber then to start game one on regular rest of the ALDS as well. And that's something that Terry Francona is considering too, so that you do get back on your regular, you know, 1-2-3 of Kluber Carrasco. But nobody has talked about Carrasco in all of this. Because of him waiting to start game three on the road, which I understand, he has been much, much better on the road than Bauer. I get that too, but he's going to end up pitching on his 10th day since his last start. Is that going to be a problem for Carrasco, do you think, Dennis?
It could be, Bob. It could. The reason being is that even though Carrasco is a power pitcher, you know, he does rely on some sink to his pitches. He's not a sinker baller, but he does have a two-seamer that, you know, he likes to have do some serious movement. And, you know, the saying about two-seamer guys or guys who throw that, whether it's 10% of the time or 50% of the time, is that sometimes you'd rather have them tired as opposed to too fresh because they throw through the break and they overpower the pitch and it doesn't have the late movement. So it's possible that that Carrasco is too fresh for his own good, but I doubt it. I mean, I doubt that's going to be the reason. I mean, I think if Carrasco gets beat, he's going to get beat because the Yankees were better than he was. I don't think it'll be a case of, well, he had too much rest.
He'll go simulated, right, though, I would imagine, in between in this big, long layoff? Since
yeah, I think he did yesterday. I thought he did yesterday, Bob. I thought I saw a clip of him yesterday doing a sim game at Progressive Field.
Just so
or
the arm is,
sim innings or whatever it was.
Right, just
what's
so
that?
The arm is on its regular, you
yes.
know.
Yeah, they got all that stuff mapped out.
Good. Okay, and that is good. Now I want to talk about the starters as it pertains to the bullpen, because this is something else Terry Francona did that, I don't know, again, the obligatory, yes, Terry will be proven right. He knows more baseball than me. But I have to ask it because there are just things that I don't like about it. The bullpen, the Indians bullpen, I think was the best bullpen in baseball for the entire 2017 season. As you pointed out, and we both pointed out, I think you could look at them comparable to the Yankees right now, that they are very, very similar to one another in effectiveness and in terms of versatility. So that's fine to say. But that bullpen that was the best in baseball, literally from long relief to short relief to setup to closing in loss in losing games and holding leads, all of the different things that they did, it isn't going to be the same bullpen that is going to be in this postseason because they have taken three arms out of it. Talking about Goody and McAllister and who else didn't make it?
Otero,
all of whom had sub-3 ERAs. And they all played very valuable roles in this whole thing, and added to it instead are two starters, Salazar and Clevinger. So it's not the same bullpen that was the best bullpen in baseball. And, of course, as Tito said, now I might even add Bauer to that later in this series, and I might throw Tomlin into that earlier in this series. Am I wrong to, again, outside of, yes, we have to put our trust in a guy who's going to be a Hall of Fame manager before it's all said and done. You're spot on with that, Dennis. But am I wrong to wonder or to at least be nervous about the presence of all these starters in a bullpen that has been used so masterfully and performed so masterfully all season long?
Not necessarily, Bob. You have a right to wonder about it. I wonder about it. Look, I don't trust Salazar. I don't. You know, I mean, he was lights out in his appearance against the Twins down the stretch here when he popped back up on the radar and flashed what he's, you know, what he's capable of. But you never know what you're going to get for Salazar these days. You don't know if the arm's going to be tight. You don't know if the control's going to be off. If he's going to give up hits, if he's going to walk guys. So I don't trust Salazar. Clevenger's a guy who's unproven. And I get that the only way you can get well,
that's
right. Starter,
and Clevenger, and this is one of the reasons I asked it, because, you know, I love Clevenger as a starter, 21 starts in ERA, but that's better than Carrasco's, for crying out loud, in the full season. And here he is just going to, you know, come out of the bullpen in various roles, and I just don't know if I necessarily like that.
Yeah, no, you're right. And what I meant when I said Clevenger's unproven is, number one, he hasn't been a major league starter the entire season, let alone a reliever the entire season, but also he has no postseason experience. And I get that you can't automatically, I mean, you have to get experience to get it. You know what I mean? I mean, you're inexperienced until you get some. So one of these days he was going to have to do it. But I would have preferred Clevenger over Tomlin as your potential fourth starter. But once again, Francona and Callaway, Mickey Callaway, pitching coach, they know their personnel better than we do. And, you know, I just sit there and go, okay. I mean, you know, Terry Francona pulled a million rabbits out of his hat last year to get him to game 7 of the World Series in 10 innings. So I got to trust he knows what he's doing. But I would have preferred Clevenger as the fourth guy, and then, you know, Tomlin, if you're going to carry him, as the, you know, long man.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's how I would have done this too. And again, he, like you said, they have the reasons. I'm sure we might not know what they are, and in time, perhaps we will. Maybe it's Tomlin because he made such a heroic run last year with some really difficult personal circumstances and pitched very well in the postseason. Maybe they're relying on that experience as opposed to the Clevenger doesn't have any yet kind of thing. But just from a performance standpoint, to me, I mean, Clevenger, you know, started 21 games. Now, that's not a full season's workload, but it's not just a couple weeks. He was a starter for, you know, 4 months of the season, and he was terrific. 12-6 with an ERA of 3.11, and was just terrific, and really solidified himself in the middle of that rotation. I just would have liked to have seen him be there in that. And I'll tell you what, once they advance, assuming that they are able to, I can absolutely see that turning a little bit and Clevenger becoming maybe the fourth starter in a 7-game series that Terry Francona might make a change to. D-Man, let's briefly go over to the National League. What do you see tonight? Any thoughts at all? Have you been paying attention at all to the D-backs and the Rocks?
Yeah, I kind of like the Rockies to I don't even know if I didn't look at the line, but I assume because the Rockies are on the road that they're the underdog, but I like the Rockies to win that game. I just have a feeling about how they're capable of going into an environment like that and pulling one out. Maybe I've got a little bit of a bias because one of my favorite non-Indians players is Charlie Blackmon, so I got that working, but I think the Rockies can win that game.
Who's coming out of the National League then? Well, you know what? Let's not do that. Let's just briefly on the
series. Oh, I can do it.
Well, we know
I'll
that
do
we,
it for you.
We know
Bob,
that. Well, that's
want.
Okay. Well, let's do Nats and Cubs first, and what do you see happening there? And then obviously the Dodgers will play the winner of this thing tonight. So I don't know if I can even ask you to pick that, but do the Nats and Cubs Bryce Harper? I think he had 14 at bats at the end of the year coming back from that injury. If he's not Bryce Harper, I have a hard time seeing the Nationals overcoming the Cubs. What do you see?
Oh, I agree with you, Bob. I think the Cubs make quick work of the Nationals. I think the Cubs are hot at the right time. They cruise through most of the regular season, but they're the defending champs, and they're feeling it, and they have no fear whatsoever of the Nationals. I think the Nationals are a paper tiger. regular season wonder boys, and then they fade in the playoffs. They'll have that rattling around in their head. It wouldn't surprise me if the Cubs steal home field right away, game one. Nationals have the built-in excuses like they always do. Harper, not enough ABs, as you pointed out. Scherzer's hammy. I think the Cubs win that series in four games.
And then you said you'd do it to go all the way through. I won't ask you to go all the way through, but since you said you like the Rockies, Rockies-Dodgers, is L.A. back to being the L.A. they were? Are they going to coast through that series, or does Colorado have a chance if that comes to pass?
Well, I think Colorado's got a chance if, in fact, they get by the Diamondbacks. I think they have a chance against the Dodgers, but ultimately I think the Dodgers will prevail in a series of six or seven games. And by the way, if it's the D-backs, same feel. I think the Dodgers win that first series against the wild card winner, whoever it is.
And then Cubbies and Dodgers then was what you would have coming through. What do you think?
I hate to say it, Bob, but I see the Cubs right back in the World
you
Series.
Do, really?
You know, I'm not. I've got buddies because I went to school at Northwestern. I got buddies who are Cubs guys, and I haven't spoken to them since last year. It's that much of a bitterness for me that the Cubs beat the Indians. So, but I see the Cubs doing it again, getting back to the World Series, and I don't think that that series is going to be all that difficult. Because here's the thing, the Cubs don't fear playing on the road, number one. So the, as you saw in the World Series, among other series, the Cubs had no problem going into Progressive Field and going 2-2, whereas in their own building, they were 1-2. So, 1-2. Were they 3-1 at Progressive Field?
Yeah,
did I get
that
wrong?
The Indians only won game one at home.
That's right.
Right, there you go. So, what's always been in my head is if the Indians would have gone 500 at home in the World Series, they would have won. That's what's always rattled around in my head. All they had to do was go 2-2. So the Cubs don't fear going on the road anywhere. And they certainly don't fear the Dodgers. They beat them last year on the way to the World Series. So, no, I think that the Cubs get back to the World Series to represent the National League.
Back to the American League quickly. Verlander v. Sale game one. Who wins that and who wins the series?
Well, I like the Astros. I think Verlander rises to the occasion. I think the Astros win it in six games. I didn't like the way the Red Sox looked down the stretch, and the Astros are feeling it. So, and they're going to use home field to their advantage.
Last thing, Dennis, give me a comment on Jose Ramirez's response to Major League Baseball on Twitter. For those who did not see this, people, I mean, this is it kind of went viral, at least in Ohio it did. Major League Baseball, from their official Twitter feed, posted yesterday this, or tweeted this. Home field advantage and 102 wins, the second most in at Indians history. Which is the biggest reason they're here? Hashtag win from within. 7% of the people said Lindor's power emerges. 16% of the people said adding Edwin and Bruce. 24% of the respondents said Kluber being Kluber. And 53% say that 22-game winning streak. Jose Ramirez responded to @MLB with the following. None of the above. We're good, young, hungry, and together. It went viral, D-Man.
That's Jose. He's got a point. And, you could have said Jose Ramirez and should have said Jose Ramirez had gotten a high percentage. But, we'll see. I've always said this about this year's Indians. If they're going to lose in the playoffs, it's not going to be because the stage was too bright or too big or the lights were too bright. They're going to lose because the other team was better. This is not a team that's going to wilt under any kind of pressure because they have experience and they have an attitude of, we're going to give it everything we have, and if it's not good enough, it's not good enough.
Couldn't agree more. I just love how Jose Ramirez handled that. I mean, just so true. We're good, young, hungry, and together. It's not Lindor, it's not me, it's not Kluber, it's not any of the above. It's us, good, young, hungry, and together, and I hope that is exactly what leads to this win in this series and beyond. Dennis Maniloff, out of Cleveland, Cleveland Plain Dealer. Dennis, thanks for the breakdown, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Coach.
You got it. Thanks, man. All right, 4 o'clock. Here's what we're going to do. We got about our top of the hour local sports center coming your way, but not until I hook you up with some of the good stuff from Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. You know what I got? I got a $25 gift certificate to Don Juan. As a matter of fact, I've got two of them, and I'm going to give both of them away. One to caller 6 and one to caller 7. Right now, 866-240-1065. Get your dinner taken care of or lunch later in the week, whatever you want to. $25 gift certificate to Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. Callers 6 and 7, they're yours. Local Sports Center to follow. Talking college football next hour as well, right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Swing and a high fly ball, well struck out towards left center. Gardner back at the track, at the wall, and it's gone. Ryan Dozier has given the Twins a 1-0 lead. Swing and a ball ripped right field. That one back there, and that one is gone. Just over the right field wall with a low line drive homer. Eddie Rosario, two homers in the first inning, and the Twins have jumped out. It is 3-0 Minnesota. Swing and a ball ripped right field. That one on its way, gone. Didi Gregorius with one swing has tied this thing up. A wind to kick the payoff pitch. Swing and a drive, right field, and that one is gone. Gardner into the second deck, and the Yankees have taken a 4-3 lead. Swing and a ball ripped left field. Rosario back at the track, and it's gone. A line drive homer over the auxiliary scoreboard out there in left. Aaron Judge with his first postseason homer, and the Yankees have opened up a 7-4 lead. And the 0-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. Ball game. And the Yankees win the wild card. They're moving on, and they'll take on the Indians.
It's not how you draw it up, I can tell you that. Some of the moves that we've made and some of the players that we've signed, we know that our bullpen could shut down. You can't do that every game. I mean, you just can't, because physically they can't bounce back. I gave them all Sunday and Monday off for a reason, you know, because of the way it is. The character was shown in the way we fought back and answered in the first inning. That was huge. Scoring those three runs right in the first inning just showed that there was what I've seen all year is the fight in this club.
We're going to start out with Trevor game 1, Kluber game 2, Carrasco game 3, and Tomlin game 4. And now saying that, we're a little creative with our roster. Tomlin will be available in the bullpen first couple games, so game 4 could change. Trevor will be available later in the series, whether it be a start or bullpen. We're trying to get as much flexibility as we can. We wanted to keep Kluber on his day, so that was the reason the 2-5. We didn't try to overcomplicate.
Well, they can compete with anyone with that bullpen,
right,
and with the power they showed, three more home runs tonight. The difference is Cleveland's bullpen is as good as the Yankees' bullpen, which is ridiculous. We have two bullpens this good, and now they'll be going head-to-head. The difference is Cleveland has Corey Kluber, and even though he's going to start game 2, they still have three very, very good starting pitchers in this series. And when you could throw Kluber in game 2, and he's been the best pitcher in baseball since June the 1st, that's a slight edge that the Indians have over the Yankees.
Y'all show no effort. None whatsoever. You actually don't defend. You just throw lobs and alley-oops thinking that that's what people paid to come see. Ooh, ah, whatever the case may be. Listen, it's a joke. The fact of the matter is when you go on, it's basketball. Football would be different because it's violent. And I'm not trying to say that you go all out the way that you do during a game. But when you play harder in the summertime, competing in a summer league game, than you do for NBA All-Star Weekend, when all it's about is your talent against my talent and we going up against one another. That's where you're robbing folks. That's what this is about. This ain't about who's on the squad. The point is, whatever your team is, whatever you accumulate, are y'all going to compete against one another Sunday afternoon?
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling, rolling, rolling are we into hour number 2 right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, you know what? You need to be rolling along with the help of Car Stereo 1, especially when the weather turns cold. Are you going to be ready for that cold weather? You know the best way to do that? Avoid the cold weather. Avoid it altogether when it comes to scraping the ice and snow off your windows while you wait for the car to warm up. Avoid it with a remote car starter. Get that engine started long before you leave the house or the building. Get the window defroster going. Warm up the inside so you're nice and toasty when it's time to hit the road. Steve and his staff at Car Stereo 1 are going to set you up with a remote car starter using your own smartphone. for just $195 installed. It's amazing. Now, if you want, you can wait and pay $300 for the same thing later, or you can save money right now with this tremendous sale from Car Stereo One. Get your remote car starter operated by your own smartphone for just $195 installed. That's $195 installed now at Car Stereo One on Central, just a block east of Secor. Need directions? Go to CarStereo1.com. Turtle, there you have it. All right, Kush, I said we were going to talk college football, but... we're going to hold off on that till about the 4:30 portion of the show because, obviously we're going to talk with Coach Jason Candle, UT Rockets, 3-1 start in the season. We know they, have their first MAC showdown with Eastern coming up on Saturday at the Glass Bowl, but, we've got to react. You heard Stephen A. Smith screaming about it there in the montage, talking about what a joke the NBA All-Star game is and has become. Pretty damned close, in my opinion, to the NFL's Pro Bowl, which is to say that nobody takes it serious. No, seriously, nobody plays it seriously. So why are they even holding the doggone thing? That's, you know, been the mantra, I think, for a lot of people. Just kill the Pro Bowl. I felt the same way about the NBA's All-Star game in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
So now, according to reports, it was the players that actually went to the league and said, we've got to do something about this. Our All-Star game sucks, which is weird because they're the ones who made it so.
Right.
Nobody told them to take defense, the defensive end of the court, off. Nobody told them to throw lobs from half court, as Stephen A. was screaming about. They're the ones who took it from being, you know, a good, solid exhibition game that players tried in and then really turned off the intensity in the late fourth quarter, the way it used to be,
yeah,
to no intensity at all at any point in the game. And it's not even, you know, again, there used to be the challenge of Charles Barkley, considered to be the best power forward in basketball in the Eastern Conference, facing Karl Malone, considered to be the best power forward in basketball for the Western Conference, showing up against one another and showing down on one another. You know, there used to be that sense of, we want to prove that we're better than you, whether it's an individual battle or just an East versus West battle. And while the games didn't have the intensity of, you know, an NBA playoff game, you know, particularly a conference finals game where there are hard fouls and that sort of thing, it was at least competitive. Defensive players contested shots, and they actually tried to get steals, and they actually tried to make good passes and take good shots with the occasional oop or something fun, but mm-hmm. It was competitive.
Yeah.
And the NBA players of today, this new generation, millennial, if you will, although LeBron doesn't qualify as that at age 34, but... you know, these guys made it what it became, yet they're the ones who went to the league and said, we want to change something. What do you make of what they came up with, Kush, which is we're going to have the same voting in terms of selecting 24 players, 12 on each roster. We're going to still let the fans, and I can't remember the breakdown of two-thirds is the fan vote and one-third is the
I'd have to look that up. They changed players. It last year, yeah.
Yeah, but they're still going to have the starters picked by that voting, and then they're still going to have the coaches appoint the other players as all-stars, but then they're just going to go into a 24-player pool, picked old playground style by captains. Everybody stand against the wall. I'll take him. I'll take him. I'll take him. Nobody wants to be the last pick, but that's the way it's going to go without doing it publicly, so nobody knows who the last mm-hmm. pick was. But, you know, the top vote-getter in each conference is now going to pick the teams, whether it's from the East or the West. What do you think?
I don't mind the format. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how different it might be because, you know, as you point out, they're still drawing it from the old East and West. They're just getting broken up after that to be on whichever team via captain and a pick. But
which means this, some players' teammates could be opposing one another.
Correct. Sure. But I picked the Stephen A. line that you heard in the montage because – in my humble opinion, his assessment is absolutely right. Doesn't matter how they do it. If they're not going to give effort, doesn't matter what format the game is, it's still going to be trash. This is about effort of the players. And again, we're not saying go all out and play as if it's game 7 of the East Finals or something like that. No. But whatever it's become, that's got to stop. It's got to be at least somewhat competitive to the average fan's eye test when you're actually playing it, kind of like it was in the late 70s, 80s, and maybe into the early 90s before it really started becoming the clown show
the
that it is.
Yeah.
So that's why I agree with Stephen A. It doesn't matter how you pick them. If they're still going to give the same effort we saw last year or the year before, then it won't matter. It'll be the same garbage.
I don't disagree with a word of that from you or from Stephen A. Smith. What I would say, though, is what if this is what makes them take some pride in it because they have been picked? In other words, LeBron has been the leading vote getter for like ever, so he will be picking the players for his team, for Team LeBron. It won't be called that, but I don't know how they're going to call it. Did they talk about names? I don't think so.
I haven't heard anything on that front.
It can't be East versus West, you know, and the leading vote getter in each conference is going to be picking the team. I guess they could still call it East and West because that player is from, you know, the leading vote getter from the East and the West. But anyway, it'll be LeBron picking his 12 guys or 11 other guys, and probably Steph Curry, who has led in the Western Conference voting for the last few years, probably picking for the other side. Aren't they going to want to win? You know what I mean? Aren't they going to take that a little more seriously? Don't you think LeBron will motivate his guys and say, fellas, I didn't pick this group up to go out there and get blown out 163-100. I want to play.
Yeah.
And I want to stop those guys. And they may take it personally from that standpoint. Unless, you know, the players decide just to pick their best buddies and not their best players. For example, you know, LeBron might say, man, I've always wanted to play with Melo. Melo, you're coming over, and I'm going to pick Chris Paul. I'm going to put the banana boat team together.
Right.
I'm going to get CP3 and Melo and me and who? Oh, and D. Wade. Well, Wade probably won't be an all-star with the Cavaliers. But you understand the point.
Yes.
If they pick it to win, if they pick the team to be the best players and to be the best team, it could be something that maybe changes the way they approach the game and that they might actually play defense.
Motivation.
And they might actually do something, you know, competitive for a change.
Motivation to actually play the game is still the whole key here. Even in this sense, you know, I don't know about some of the guys, you know, on the proverbial banana boat, but I would like to think in a vacuum, those guys who got picked last for each side would be a little bit motivated.
I don't think they're going to know, though. I mean, unless they talk privately.
Oh,
I'm
sure they will. I'm sure that word. Oh, you got picked last for so-and-so's
team.
I don't know.
I
bet that'll
come out.
You
talk about egos being shattered. You talk about, I mean, you could create some real serious controversy here.
True.
You know what I mean? I mean, you could really seriously have some problems with there. I think they're gonna make this a private vote. I don't know. I'm really interested. Would LeBron and Curry be in the same room maybe with Adam Silver and other league executives and say, okay, I pick him, I pick him, okay, I pick him, I pick him, back and forth, and this stays here among the three of us and nobody else so that nobody does know who the last pick was? I kind of feel like it would have to be. And I kind of feel like when it happens that way, if that's how it does, Jim, that Kyrie Irving would be the last pick of the entire game. Because LeBron ain't going to pick Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
And Steph Curry, who is a point guard himself,
right,
probably won't be picking Kyrie Irving, at least until it came down to the last pick. Whoever got the first pick is probably going to avoid him. Whoever got the last pick, if they flipped a coin and LeBron would have to take Kyrie, that would be something interesting to see those two play together. It would probably be more interesting than last year, when Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant found themselves in the game together for the Western Conference.
Yeah.
You know, where, remember, Durant threw Westbrook an oop, and everybody said, oh, is that the melting of the ice now between the two? And it's like, no, it was just a basketball play. But I'm just wondering, the LeBron-Curry,
yeah,
or Kyrie thing, I mean, I should say, seems to be a little bit frostier, if you will.
And that could pop up in there and have an effect. But again, it still comes back to motivation when it's actually time to play the game, and that means giving a little effort, obviously not to hurt yourself or any stupid thing like that, but at least more effort that is clearly given now, which is zero on that end of the floor. It's about making it a more competitive game, and I will at least in this early stages, because all this news just came out on this yesterday, and that's why things like, are the players vote for their team, you know, picking of the teams, that can be part. We don't know the answer to that yet, because this is just coming out now. But it doesn't matter. They have to be able to be motivated to play a sort of real basketball game. And That's still going to be the key, and I'm at least tipping my cap a little bit to the players in this because they're it's on their minds and
yes,
they're thinking
they
about it.
They realize how embarrassing what they're doing
yes.
is. They realize
they could have just ignored it.
Taking.
I mean, they could have just ignored it, for example, and keep going the way they are. So I'll give them a little bit of kudos for actually saying, you know, we do acknowledge the problem here. Let's try something
it
else. At least they're starting
more
somewhere.
Fun too, even if the competitiveness isn't what we want it to be, the way you and Stephen A. talked about. It might be more interesting, too, just to the average fan to see how do these personalities mesh together. For example, what if Steph Curry is passed over in the fan voting this year by Russell Westbrook, who won the MVP last year? Russell Westbrook is picking for the West. Ain't no way he's picking Kevin Durant. And that means Kevin Durant is going to be on LeBron James' team.
Right.
And that is one of the stranger, you know, rivalries because some are saying Durant has closed the gap and pushing LeBron for a title of best player on the planet. He outplayed him in the finals. I think we all agree on that. He was the MVP of the finals. They played the same position. They checked one another, and Durant got the best of him. LeBron knows it and, of course, wants to keep his title. Would he want to play with Kevin Durant? Probably not. But, you know, Westbrook ain't going to pick him if he's picking for the Western Conference. You know, and again, like Kyrie, either LeBron, no way he picks Kyrie, or maybe he makes him his first pick just to mess with him and say, see, you know, and even make him look really bad, you know, and say, see, you know, I
that's
didn't
why I
you.
Hope the vote and how they pick the teams when we get to that point. Those little reasons are why I hope it's not private, but it very well could be. We don't know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, I want to get a couple of quick calls in here because we got some good stuff coming up at the bottom of the hour. As a matter of fact, Jim, while I take these calls, you need to screen these calls. The calls to qualify for the ESPN 106.5 The Ticket European Vacation. That's right, a chance to fly to one of six European destinations from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina. Be caller 5 right now to 866-240-1065. We're only doing this to the end of the week to be qualified. You can also qualify one time by registering at 1065theticket.com. But caller number 5 right now, 866-240-1065, you'll qualify for that European vacation drawing, which will happen on Monday from Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 1065 The Ticket. So while you talk to them, I'll talk to Tim, who is in Toledo, right here on ESPN 1065 The Ticket. Tim, how are you, man?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I am outstanding because I'm about to watch my Cleveland Indians pound the living hell out of your New York Skankies. What do you think of that?
I don't know if they're going to pound the hell out of them, okay?
I had to do that to you. You're our favorite Yankee fan that calls us. So, man, what were you thinking last night when it was 3-0 in the first and your boys getting pounded?
Well, I was in front of the TV after about 2 batters yelling at Girardi to get Severino out of there. Because I've seen him do that a couple other times this year. You know, one game he looks like the second coming of Lefty Gomez, only he's right-handed. And the next time he looks like my wife. And that doesn't give me a lot of confidence on the base.
Well, you know, and when you're talking about a 23-year-old kid, and he's a kid in that vernacular, he really is, you're going to get that. He's got the stuff to be a star, and he will be, but obviously he's also got the penchant to fall apart a little bit, being so young and inexperienced in big moments like that.
So I don't know how this is going to work out. You know, earlier in the year when they played in Cleveland, they split 4 games.
Yep.
But then when the Indians were in the middle of their winning streak, I think it was like the second series in the streak, they swept them 3 in a row in New York. And a guy that nobody talks about is the Yankees' first baseman, Greg Bird. This guy's going to be a legitimate, solid ball player. You know, 2 years ago he came up when Teixeira was hurt for the last third of the season. Teixeira was always hurt. And he hit like 15 home runs. So they had him penciled in last year. Well, I don't know who the hell was running spring training. But the second day of spring training last year, he's a first baseman. He's shagging balls in the outfield. He runs into the fence and breaks his shoulder. So he didn't play at all in 2016.
Well, listen. I don't have time to break down all of the young prospects for the Yankees because I'm short on time here. Just give me your prediction. Is it going to be Indians moving on to the ALCS, or do you think your Yankees will upset the best team in baseball?
Dodgers are the best team in baseball.
Ah, you're still clinging to that. I'm not. I think they, over the whole season, of course, they did have two more wins than the Indians, but the way all of their teams are playing now going into the playoffs, the Indians are the best team in baseball. So, anyway, who wins the series?
I'm a mercenary at heart. If I was going to bet money, I'd bet on the Indians, okay?
I love it. I love it. Tim, the Yankee fan, is betting on the Indians. If he had to, he would bet on the Indians. Tim, I got to run, brother. Okay, let me get to Jimmy in Toledo real quick because we got to make some room for Jason Candle, head coach of the UT Rockets, talking Mac football. Jimmy, go ahead.
I don't care what they do, the NBA All-Star game. Probably by that time there'll be so many protests, nobody would be watching anyways.
I don't think so.
Straight up.
I don't think so, because Adam Silver, who is, he is just about as socially liberal as they come. I mean, he's a big hypocrite in that regard. But he has even said the rules are what the rules are. I mean, even Mark Cuban, another liberal, has said that if any of his guys try to kneel during the national anthem, he will fine them because it is against the NBA rules. They have a rule they follow that football does not. Hopefully they'll do that.
That's cool. I hope so. But, I was a huge fan of LeBron James, but him running his mouth on Twitter, pretty much, I'm finished with all that and the drama in Cleveland. So I'm off basketball anyways. And you know, you had a discussion yesterday about the playoffs and whatnot, and
yeah.
I just want to see baseball stay in October, and the scenario you guys were plotting out, it's already into November, and, you know, you want a long layoff. You don't really want any longer layoffs because I can tell you as a Tiger fan, waiting a week to play to get to the World Series saps all the momentum out of you.
Yes, it does.
And I can tell you that the Tigers probably should have a couple World Series, but they don't have a single one. In fact, they only won one game because momentum's everything in the postseason. When you take a week and the temperature drops maybe 15, 20 degrees, forget about it. It's a whole different thing. And I think you got to really temper yourself. Has anybody laid out the calculations of what the Indians are going to have to go to run the table and win the World Series? Because I got to tell you, I think you guys, and I'm not trying to be negative. And you have every reason to be excited, but I'm telling you, Houston is coming on and nobody's giving him any credit. Verlander's won 9 out of his last 10 decisions. He's 5-0 in September, and he's that guy I've been telling everybody all year that he actually was. He hadn't won anywhere. His velocity was always there. He just can pitch now, and it's all right there in front of him. You're going to see that playoff Verlander.
If the Astros get through to the Indians, it's going to be fun.
He has been that good.
Listen, first of all, I'm not sleeping on the Astros at all. He has been that good. There's no question about it. But the one team he has not been that good against is the Indians. The Indians have rocked him for the last couple of years.
September they did it when he was on the same roll. They got to him last year, early in the year.
I'll talk more about that tomorrow, Jimmy, because I got to run. I'll give you Verlander stats.
Sleep on him at your own risk.
No, I will. I appreciate it. I got to run now. But I'll run down Verlander's stats against the Indians in the last 2-3 years on tomorrow's show. It's just I don't have time to do it now because I got to remind you that we are talking college football with Jason Candle coming up right after the bottom of the hour Sports Center, local Sports Center. And since we're talking college football, we got to talk about where to watch college football. Of course, you know that's B-Dubs, right? That's where you watch your college football, your pro football, all of it. Countless taps and HD screens available at every B-Dubs location, and they have committed to creating the perfect atmosphere for watching football, including what they're serving, food and drinks included. The classic menu item they brought back is the 35th Wex sandwich, and they're featuring a limited-time-only Blue Moon barbecue sauce that goes perfect with football. There's more, but you got to come in to find out to the best place with the best football experience going. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. Hey, congratulations to our latest qualifier for the flyaway, the European vacation. It's Eric Fackelman of Sylvania qualified. Don't forget, you can do that 2 more times in the 420 to 430 portion of the show tomorrow and on Friday. And then you can also register at 1065theticket.com. Also, congrats to our Don Juan winners, Joel Immel of Perrysburg and Frank Zimmerman of Gibsonburg for their $25 gift certificates. All right, let me get to that bottom of the hour local sports center coming your way. Then we talk college football rocket style. Toledo is going to be hosting Eastern in the first MAC game of the season for both clubs. That'll be on Saturday, and Coach Candle will talk with Cush coming up next right here on the ticket.
Now, back to
Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here as we close out this Wednesday edition, talking some college football bye week this past week for the Toledo Rockets. And then MAC play begins this weekend, high noon at the Glass Bowl, as Eastern Michigan comes to Toledo to kick off. And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here as we close out this Wednesday edition, talking some college football bye week this past week for the Toledo Rockets. And then MAC play begins this weekend, high noon at the Glass Bowl, as Eastern Michigan comes to Toledo to kick off the MAC portion of the schedule. To help us talk all things Toledo Rockets, we welcome in the head coach of the Rockets, back with us on the program, Jason Candle. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing great, Jim. How are you?
Hey, not too bad. Not too bad. Bye week go well for you guys?
Yeah, it did. Chance to heal some injured guys and certainly do some good hard self-evaluation of where we're at as a football team in all three phases of the game, and you know, certainly look at some things that need to be corrected and, you know, highlight some things we maybe have done well, you know, over the first four games, and see maybe if we can build upon those and as we move forward into a tough MAC conference schedule here.
Talk to me about some of those injuries and recoveries. I know there haven't been any major ones necessarily for you guys, but like any football team, a couple of games into the season, you're going to have some, but you get the bye week to rest some of those up. What's the status of some of those guys?
Yeah, I think some of the guys that, you know, that we're not going to have, I mean, you know, they're, you know, we did have some season-ending ones. The bye week doesn't, you know, it's here nor there for those guys. Guys that have to have require surgery and be out, and you know, so we'll lose Tuzar Skipper for the year with an ACL or our defensive end, and then you know, you probably saw in the Miami game our left guard Yazid getting carried off in the cart. You know, he ended up breaking his leg and had surgery to get that fixed. You know, and so a couple of our guys, you know, and then early on, a couple of surgery guys as well. So we've had some guys that, you know, we've gotten hit, and they've, you know, they've been big ones. You know, the guys that got the bumps and the bruises and the things like that, you know, that's pretty much everybody at this point in the season. So the bye week came at a good time to get them guys rested up and as healthy as they can be for this stretch run here. So.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the extravaganza. Let's talk defense, coach, and some of the things you guys may have worked on during this bye week, because for what it's worth, in the last two games you guys did play, the Tulsa game and the game at Miami, giving up 51 and 52 points respectively. Now, those are different opponents, but they're both solid teams, and they both ran the ball very, very well in both of those games. What defensively have you guys been working on?
Yeah, whether you give up those type of points to Miami and Tulsa, or you give those type of points up to the Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles, it's still not the standard of what we set to be, and it doesn't matter who the opponent is. That's not acceptable here, and we have to do a better job of stopping the run, you know, and I think there's, you know, some really good hard work to be put into that and making sure our run fits are solid and some of those explosive runs don't get out on us, you know, and we have to tackle better in space. You know, I think for the most part, you know, throughout the course of both of those football games, we did a really good job of containing the running game, you know, but explosive plays have just broke our back. And, you know, whether it takes 10 runs to get 80 yards or it takes one, it's still 80 yards to go in the stat sheet. So, you know, you want to eliminate that, those big plays. They're, you know, they're momentum killers or momentum swings for the other team. And they're kind of backbreaking and deflating to your confidence back there. So, you know, we got to continue to work on our tackling, and certainly, you know, as the games get tough here, it's going to come down to how well the teams can run the football and how well teams can stop the run. I think we're 10th or 11th in our conference right now in rush defense, and something we got to continue to improve on. You know, when we're second or third in rushing offense, and we got to continue to improve on that, because in my opinion, we should lead the league every year in rushing offense.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets, getting set for the MAC opener at the Glass Bowl this Saturday. High noon, the kickoff against Eastern Michigan. Talk to me about how different it is, if it is different from any of your guys' preparation standpoint, considering we're now into conference play.
Well, each week presents its own set of challenges. You know, this is a good team that's coming in here to play us on Saturday. You know, they're number one in our league in scoring defense and one or two in rush defense. You know, they've done a really good job of playing really sound football defensively. They don't give up a bunch of big plays. They are what we're trying to become. You know, a defense that it limits the explosive play, and you know, gives themselves a chance. They make you beat them offensively. Everything kind of revolves around the quarterback, and he's a local guy here from St. John's, and you know, so we know him well and know what it would mean, how much it would mean for him to win his last chance here in a Glass Bowl. So we got a good opponent coming in here. He's playing it with a lot of confidence. Went to Rutgers and won a game there, and last weekend lost a nail biter to Kentucky in the game that I thought, you know, for the most part, they were the better team and should have won the game. So, you know, this is you know, week one of Mid-American Conference play, and you know, it's a stout opponent right off the bat.
And what's interesting about that, Coach, is, you know, most people, you know, the cursory glance, oh, Eastern Michigan, pshaw, whatever. But no, that's not the case. I mean, though you guys won the last couple times out, and regardless of the scores, they played you guys tough in the games that I remember seeing, especially in these last years. This is a program that is finally bringing itself out of the seemingly never-ending doldrums that they usually had been in. So I think that's an important point to stress. Just because it says Eastern Michigan on the schedule, these aren't your older brothers, Eastern Michigan Eagles.
Yeah, anybody that would believe that it's just Eastern Michigan didn't watch the bowl games last year because they were in a bowl game. You know, this coaching staff has done an excellent job. They're, I think, 10-7 out of their last 17 games. You know, you'd have to go back a long stretch to find a winning record in a 17-game stretch, you know, from that program. So give Coach Creighton a ton of credit, his staff, you know, getting their kids to buy in and to what they're selling and what they're trying to build. You know, I think we're all in the same boat when it comes to that across the country. You know, everybody's got a belief system that is their own, and, you know, you're trying to create the behavior that matches that belief system and to get it to work and go in the right direction, you know, for 12 straight weeks. And I think you know, you saw a couple years ago, we was a kind of a one-sided game here in the Glass Bowl for most of the time. Last year we needed 58 and a half minutes to finally get an extra score to go up two scores in that game. But, you know, you could see the progression of a team progressively getting better, rallying around their quarterback, and certainly playing better and believing what their coach and the coaching staff's trying to instill in them.
And with Eastern Michigan playing a little bit better, and thank you for pointing out, you know, to those who would just see Eastern Michigan, that, yeah, this team went to a bowl game last year, which is a rarity for that program. But, you know, them playing better and being a better overall program right now, it really makes that whole parity in the MAC that we've all talked about for a while now even more stark when you can't just put a nice check mark next to Eastern Michigan as in the past. Talk to me about the parity of this league.
Yeah, it's really simple. You don't bring it any week that you don't bring it, you get beat. It's just that simple. And there isn't a team that's, you know, elite and separated themselves and, you know, on a different stratosphere as everybody else. You know, there's you know, each and every week you have to get up and you have to get ready to play. You have to prepare really well. You have to respect what really good weeks of practice look like and continue to do that. You know, you can't look ahead. You got to take each day one day at a time, and certainly, you know, hope that your productive week of practice leads into productive play on game day. You know, and the team that can find the most consistency in their routine and do their, you know, the routine things better than anybody else usually is the team that's holding a trophy in Detroit.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. Eastern Michigan coming to the Glass Bowl this Saturday as the Rockets done with the bye week, and now it's the opener for Mid-American Conference play. High noon, by the way, the kickoff coming up Saturday at the Glass Bowl. Coach, before I let you go, and thanks as always for the time and the insight, give me a couple keys from your guys' point of view to make sure you get a win in this one.
Yeah, first and foremost, take care of the football. You know, and we talked about, you know, how I feel about the running game on both sides of the ball. Got to run the football effectively. Got to find a way to stop the run. And then, you know, obviously, you know, homecoming weekend here in Toledo. And, you know, I'm expecting a great crowd. And I expect the Glass City to come out and stand up for the Rockets. And hopefully we can feed off this great crowd and utilize that energy to get a win.
Head coach Jason Gendel of the Toledo Rockets, thanks so much for the time, Coach. Best of luck out there on Saturday, and let's hope we're talking about another Rockets win when we chat again next week.
Thanks, Jim. Go Rockets.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Gendel, joining us here on the Extravaganza. Jim Kuslin here, and you know, that's one of the key things, you know, and that's why I worded it like that to Coach. This isn't your older brother's Eastern Michigan. They just made a bowl game last year for the second time ever. They played better these last 2 years and playing better overall this year. This is not the 1-11, easy win that it has been in years past. In most years, you know, it is true. The Eastern Michigan team is usually at the bottom of the Mid-American Conference. They're a team that always has struggled, failed to get talent, things like that. But that's not as much the case anymore. This is more up-and-coming program. I don't think they're necessarily the best team in the division. I still firmly believe that's the Toledo Rockets. But a fascinating game, I think, to start Mid-American Conference play just because these aren't the horrible Eastern Michigan teams we're all used to. If you fall asleep against them, they can beat you. As Coach said, just in last year's game, for example, it took them until the last minutes of the ball game before they were able to get the 2-score lead that they were trying to get, meaning anything could happen and Eastern could have, tied it until that point. So this is a tougher team than it's been in years past. And with Eastern Michigan not being the cakewalk type of game that it used to be for not just the Rockets, but for everybody in this program, that just adds to more parity in this league. That's something we've talked about, not just, of course, with Coach Cannon. We talked about it with Coach Jinks. And any time conversations on Mid-American Conference football come up, parity is one of those things that come up. And Coach is absolutely right. You're now at a point where if Eastern Michigan is going to be a halfway decent program, then you literally cannot sleep on anyone in this conference. You sleepwalk in and into and through a game, and that opponent will beat you in this league, no matter how solid of a team you are. That all being said, it's the MAC opener. It's at home at the Glass Bowl. We know what the Rockets can do offensively. They can shore up a few things defensively, especially in the run game that we saw in their last two games, a win over Tulsa and the loss at Miami, where the Rockets' defense allowed 50-plus points in both games and allowed big-time rushers and running backs to have their way in those couple of games. I think in both games, the main running back for both Tulsa and Miami got over 200 yards. You can't let that happen again, and that probably is one of the things, and it sounds like it is, that Coach Candle and the squad was working on a lot during this extra week, because it was the bye week, so you get maybe a few extra practices in there. But this is going to be an interesting start to MAC play, and it'll tell us a lot about how the Rockets are going to approach conference play. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Drive Time coming at you next. We'll talk about all these things and more when we reconvene. See ya.